Okay, guys, so this is Padraig from the Humble Coach podcast. I'm joined by Dara from fitbox.ie and the owner of CrossFit 15 in Dublin. Dara, you're very welcome.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Cool.
First man up.
Good
No
stuff.
pressure.
So basically, I suppose, guys, I've started this podcast just on the back of having a good think about a lot more interest in coaching theory and coaching practice and methods recently. And with that, I've decided to chat to a lot of other good coaches and Dara being one, about their different methods of coaching and how the different ways and means of coaching can really help other coaches to make big progress with their clients. So thanks for coming on, Dara, and we'll get stuck in. So just to get into your background a bit, and just give us a bit of a spin on who you are at the moment or what you've been doing in the recent past, if you could.
Okay, well, I got into the whole fitness game in early 2007. I did a degree in another industry before I got into all this, and decided to wanted to see the world a little bit. So I packed a backpack and off I went. And I got into that too while I was backpacking. That's how I initially got into the typical steps, the gym instructor and PTs and advanced PTs and the kettlebell specialist. And at that time, CrossFit wasn't really well known at all. You I'd say you were probably in it before I was.
I was kind of 2008, kind of early 2008. I kind of nipped
Okay,
into
so
it.
yeah, roughly around
So
the same
around the same
time.
time as, yeah.
For anybody that just kind of got into it was way before nanos were even a thing.
Oh
Yeah,
yeah. There was no nanos about then, absolutely.
you saw somebody doing a thruster in a normal gym, and it was kind of like
Yeah.
you gave each other the nod, you know, you knew what was
Exactly.
going on.
True story. That's exactly how it was.
That's how it was, wasn't it?
Yeah,
So,
absolutely.
look, yeah, and I kind of got into that side, and then I was doing a PT course. At the time, actually, a master's PT course in Australia. And Steve Willis, who's well known now
Oh
on the
yeah.
Australian Biggest Loser, so
Good stuff.
he got me into it all. He
Nice.
was our lecturer, and this sounds extremely unexciting, but he did the hollow rock one day. And I was like, what is that? I want that thing. And
Nice.
he's just like, oh yeah, cross it, la la la. And that's how I started. Kind of luckily, I'll be honest, I kind of was lucky in how and the people that kind of took me under the wing from day one. I was under Steve for quite a lot of my time over there and the heat from Steve.
Really good stuff. Good stuff.
From there, yeah, just went down, did my specialty CrossFit course, weightlifting, came back here, opened up my place, and here we are today.
Nice. Good stuff. Good stuff. So yeah, I suppose like that going into the next kind of question a little bit. It kind of covers it a bit there, but like that, Steve would have been a big enough character back in the old
He
CrossFit
was, yeah,
days.
he was very well known back, and
Very
he's
much
still
is still.
part of, yeah, he's into it, you know. But naturally, he stepped away in terms of he's got a different road, and he's the face of for a lot of sections within the Australian fitness industry. He'd be very well known over there anyway.
Oh, totally. Yeah,
And
exactly like that. But I
he'd be an
suppose,
old knee, as they say.
but like that, I suppose the having done the your previous kind of life nearly to an extent of your
Yeah,
previous
it feels like it's
degree
the
and
honor.
stuff, yeah. How did you, I suppose, what kind of gave you that interest in getting into the coaching kind of side? Was it moving to Australia or was it
Well, I was a
doing a
fat
bit of
dude.
that?
I was in my pre-life. I was big. I was 17 stone. So I lost that and got into that, and that ignited something within me in terms of fitness and helping people, and that's as basic as it started, and that's what sparked that kind of view change towards, hey, I'd like to, be involved with something different in terms of
Totally.
career, and naturally the first step had to be basic gym instructing,
Yeah.
101 kind of stuff,
Very much.
and that's kind of cutting away everything else. That's really what kind of brought me into it. And like I say, I was, and I know I was lucky that Steve was the lecturer at the time on my course, given what I was doing, and we just happened to cross paths. I'm always, anyway, a big believer in that you'll meet the right person at the right time in terms of career guidance. And at that point in time, Steve was there, and he had the time to kind of take me under his wing a little bit. And and that kind of started my, I suppose, to a degree, my step away from the more, at the time at least, the more traditional style of just the gym instruction and class style trainer, as opposed to the CrossFit style coach entity, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah.
And from there, yeah, just kept going.
Cool. Yeah, I suppose like that's similar kind of vein to myself, nearly to an extent. Like I was a little bit different. I don't think I was always a, I was kind of always a bit of a fat kid, but I don't know if I'm a fat dude. But I had done all the gym instruction well before that, kind of early 2000s and stuff. I think I had a pretty decent background coming into CrossFit. So I was always, it was an interesting kind of a change.
It would have been something completely different. Yeah, absolutely.
It's funny. If anything, I'm nearly gone kind of full 360 back to utilizing CrossFit in a certain way. Or else using the other elements, kind of like they're very nicely meshed these days.
Which is, I know really, we're going to end up talking about that, but there's definitely, I think, when we both kind of, I suppose, got into it, there was a very clear distinction as you were one or the other.
Oh yeah, very much.
You know, they did this and they were wrong, and you guys do this and you were wrong, and la.
Yeah.
There's now a very clear blend as to why we need both elements.
And
why they would benefit each other, you know. And if nothing else, I mean, look at regionals and the CrossFit Open. I mean, that signifies a lot of things changing, you know.
Yeah.
So no, yeah, full circle indeed. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners that were coaches that are listening will probably either have going down the same route themselves, or that's just now what they know because it's what it is.
Exactly. Like the amount of coaches that I'm seeing these days in the last couple of years, even like. And it's almost like it's like the only real thing they know is either CrossFit or it's bodybuilding or it's this or I think that's where that's more like anything, the experience alone gives a huge amount of benefit to it. But I think the experience of actual practice rather than just lots of studying or lots of this and lots of that,
I'm so over that, Jeff.
Hundreds and thousands of hours of just thinking about goddamn coaching.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Like,
and it is when you think about it, when you put it all, no doubt, and exactly what this episode and this podcast I'm assuming is directed towards is the kind of, I suppose, the finer side of coaching or the art of coaching or the more personable side and the skill of coaching.
Yeah.
Whereas, like any profession, reading the book, passing the exams and everything else is requirement for in a lot of phases just to be insured to do the job you're doing.
Totally.
But to be a coach and to be a valuable entity in your members, clients, athletes, whatever way you want to kind of look at it, there's a difference. There's a very, very obvious difference too, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things, like that's where having dealt with some students recently and tutored and stuff like that, the difference is interesting. And even CrossFit, it's still, I still would consider it kind of niche, even though it's fairly getting kind of big these days,
yeah,
but it's still pretty,
yeah.
I think it's just a different type of a niche kind of an element these days.
Yeah, it's not its own pigeonhole the way it used to be.
No.
You know, it's softened the edges for sure.
Yeah. So that was a solid start. A solid start.
We're going to go off hands and all on this. You know what I'm like, man.
So the next one, this is a tough one now. I think for me it'll be a tough one because I've got a few characters these days I'm kind of enjoying. So some of your current favorite coaches or even just kind of, I suppose, even mentors, there's probably a few classics floating around, but if you got a couple of heads you're looking at these days.
There's obviously the classics and they're there and they're timeless and you know, they essentially either devise certain principles that we all work off to a degree now or a hybrid of. But in terms for me, at the moment, and I know you're well versed on this side of it as well, but I believe the training think tank, which would be kind of headed by Max El Haj, and just that kind of that I wouldn't even say Max alone, because he offers one side to it, but that organization and just what that is beginning to develop.
Oh yeah, it's a huge thing.
I think that it's changing and will change the game in terms of the information that's there and the different coaching styles. Like, I mean, if you look at Max compared to another one of his guys, Adam, and two very different guys, incredibly knowledge, but they're different people and they're different mentorship designs and people and everything else. But in terms of current, and I would, obviously, I was under Max myself personally for nearly 3 years, so I know him very, very well. But that aside, I believe what those dudes are throwing out there is what should be spoken about, and then potentially should have been spoken about for maybe a number of years, and nobody was. And but the emotional side, the mental game, the human element, I think is what's coming out a lot. And you know me, I am quite airy fairy, some people call it, in terms of how I look at stuff. But yeah, you know, I think we match each other in that regard. But I'm very, very, very much on the person, the human fitting the coach, and the coach fitting the human, and then the program needs to match the profile and the characteristics of that person as well. Or it just won't work. Very long-winded answer there, I know, but that was one that just immediately jumped out. And I follow, I mean, I've done all training think tanks educational syllabus, so for anyone who's released it, it is savage. Like, if there is anybody listening, it is well worth consideration when you get to that point in time in your kind of coaching development. I want you know, that's what I suppose you call it. That.
It's next on my list, definitely.
Well, it is. It's certainly. It's different. I've done OPEX as well. Okay, and obviously, originally there was obviously they were together and whatever, and they've gone separate ways, and it is what it is now. Having done the OPEX and the training think tank, for me and my characteristics and the way I would coach, I found I got a lot from training think tank that OPEX just style wouldn't maybe elaborate as much on. Whereas OPEX, obviously, it goes through everything. But I just think the different approaches are, or sorry, the approaches are quite different, but extremely valuable in their own right. Outside of that, then another guy who I looked up to for a number of years would be James's little sidekick or his brother, Mike. Mike is different again to James and to Max's organization. I just the way he, and we actually had him over in our place 2 years ago doing an athlete seminar. And that was the first time I really, really got to sit down and chat with him and chat the principals wise and the coaching elements and stuff. But yeah, they'd be the three at the moment that just came to mind as we asked that question. So,
nice. So yeah, like I'm going to add on a little bit to that. Like, having looked at the training think tank guys, and I went to Max's last couple of seminars in Ireland. And really, really good stuff. But even looking at the other crew he has around him, like Mike McGoldrick, Brandon Dorman, Evan Peacon, those guys, like I remember a few years back now looking at Evan Peacon's stuff on a different blog, and he was so detailed about his programming. So scientific. It's brilliant. But like, I love that now, because when you start looking at the likes of Reasons, or even you look at the detail that they go into for the open with some of their people, it's a different game these days. Like, when you're if you are trying to be competitive and you are trying to implement a competitive program, or you're trying to especially at a decent level, like at a kind of high open, top 30, top 20 in the open kind of thing in your region or your country, it's where it has to be, I think, really, these days.
I think so. I do. Yeah. I think so. Obviously, he has some high-profile people attached to the brand now and everything else. And I think that signifies that even the athletes recognize that there's there was something missing, and that now it's beginning to be addressed. And I do believe it's the human element. It's the mental, perceptive kind of outlook as to exactly what is this all about? What am I doing? Why am I doing this? Self-value, self-confidence, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And although it remains to be seen, I would be of the opinion that it is the, it's the kind of missing link that a lot of people would not consider or maybe not put enough value on.
Yeah.
Well,
I think like exactly like that. I think we always kind of talk about it in our own gym here. We talk about the 10 general physical skills, but then there's like 11 physical or mental. Yeah. The mental skill is number 11. So,
yeah.
And the pacing and the patience and the kindness to yourself within the workout or within your scope of the training program or the year or whatever, like you have to give yourself a bit of a break, but then also when you need to pull the trigger, you can, like you have the awareness to do that. And I suppose we put some emphasis into certain workouts that we're like, okay, well look, just drop the hammer, just go here, lads. We don't mind, like, we don't mind if it's a bit robbly, it's a bit rough and ready. But we'll build a workout so that they can't really make a hames of it. They can't mess it up. They just have to get that grunt work going. And they have.
But there is a point in time there's a point in time where you have to just jump in.
Yeah.
But it's I have the remote programming service as well. Mm-hmm. But it's something that I tell everybody from day one is that you earn the right to go intense to add intensity. I think even that, just that little sentence is probably, that's a whole other discussion and stuff. But it's knowing. If anything else, probably that's just a statement. It's knowing when.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And as a coach, I think it's more like realizing that, like you said about the training think tank guys, like being aware of that profile. And when you're administering a particular class or a workout or even a particular program or a session or whatever it is, or even a sequence of exercises within a superset or whatever it is, realizing that, okay, are they going to get this actual, are they going to be able to?
Are they getting the response that they need?
Get exactly what they want from it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, we all want to be fit and healthy and happy and look good and, you know, have self-belief, but that varies to massive degrees, because we're humans and we all have our own issues, we all have our own insecurities and vulnerabilities, and exercise brings that out in a positive and negative way. Unfortunately, at the moment, it is my opinion, at least, that the fitness industry is probably bringing out a little bit more. It's masked as positive, but it's more negative. In the long run, in terms of the insecurities and vulnerabilities and the truths, I suppose, as well. But you hit the nail on the head there. Look, at the end of the day, the person walking in your door, as a coach, the first, and it's something that I was told from day one, it's the person's first, fitness follows. And that's something that I know I'm fit over in Australia, use that as the terminology, but it's the person first. You know, if they don't, and some people are so, excuse the language, but so stressed off the tits in the outside world, coming in and doing a crazy intense is actually, you're adding to their problem. Even though you may think you're not, it's understanding the profile of the person and then addressing that in a coaching environment, but with the human element, and not forgetting that at the end of the day, we don't need to be all doing the exact same thing. You know,
it's a bit of exercise and it's a bit of movement. It's good.
Yeah, sometimes the best thing in the world is just a simple sweat session.
Yeah.
And that goes, and you know, as a gym owner, and I'm sure as some of your listeners that own gyms, and I think that's actually something that gym owners struggle with, is finally admitting to themselves that it's okay to let go and not be a beast and not be as good as, you know, like, I mean, I'll tell you right now, a lot of the guys I program for are way and above my capacity, because that's not my goal. I'm here to run a business and be a coach. But sometimes just getting in and getting sweaty, going home, is the best thing for you.
I agree totally. So I suppose the next couple of questions are kind of interlinked a bit, and this is where we can kind of, I'm not too sure exactly how we're going to go with this, but we'll see how it goes. It could be interesting. I suppose certain, is there any particular kind of, I suppose it depends on what kind of way you want to go with it, but are there any particular coaching cues or kind of methods or styles that you think are either underused or overused, or any particular preference for a particular type of style, be it a quiet kind of calm style, or do you find the up in your face, giving it socks kind of stuff, or what would you
I think
have
it,
more
just for me,
for these days?
I suppose I'm a product of who has mentored me, and that's everything. I'm very, very vocal about who I learned from originally, and who I've studied from, and who I've spent time with. And just like anything, I think you should, always stay true to your roots and own up where you got your information from. For me, I was always of the opinion that as a coach, you're there to be the balanced person in the situation. Yes, they get carried away with adrenaline. They may not see their movement as bad as you do. Now, yes, there is a time where a little bit of the cheerleading or supposed style, where if you just want to tell them, look, just get stuck in, it's going to hurt, suck it up and move on.
You can kind of push
But
them a
there's
little
a,
bit there, yeah.
yeah, there is, in my style of coaching, there's very limited amount of that because I would hope that I would build enough confidence within my people that they know and are capable of knowing when it's time to sack up and go, as opposed to me shouting, go on, go on, go on, go on.
Totally.
That gets me. That gets me. You can't scream someone into better movement. You
No.
can't scream someone or cheer somebody into understanding pacing better. And that's a process. And I think that's a process-driven coaching style for me. And I would be quite blunt in my feedback to people because I think there's enough bullshit out there anyway. And yeah, I would be quite. I would hope. I don't know. Maybe I'm not. But I like to think I am quite straight to the point, quite calming, and quite direct cues when it's required. But at the same time, the very first thing I teach to guys who work for me and anybody that has come to me and asked for a little bit of guidance or coaching is that you need to understand the language of the person that you are coaching.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And that's something I actually find another coach actually probably should have mentioned would have been Ben Bergeron. I find his style of coaching, whereas I might be shocked for saying that he may not be the most technically minded in terms of programming and advanced principles and everything else,
No.
but I think a lot of the reason why the athletes go under him and do so well is because he brings out the human. He
Yeah.
brings out the required qualities of the human characteristic to be a champion. And I think that's where some people miss the boat. Do you know what kind of do you know what I mean by that? Like there's a lot to be said for allowing the human to grow within themselves as opposed to just throwing them through Fran every day of the week and they're like, oh yeah, you're gonna get better. They will, yeah. But that's not what the champions are made of. It's the mindset. So for me, I would approach and I would see coaching as that you are not there to escalate excitement or to dampen it. You're there to be the constant source of information, guidance, knowledge, and hopefully, if you've done your kind of job, I suppose, correctly over the duration of that athlete's profile and that time under you have built them enough that they will know, right, it's time to sack up, let's go. It's more of a quiet, confident style coaching that I would approach as opposed to the scream in your face, let's go kind of stuff.
I think it's interesting like that. I think I suppose I would have, I think I would have, I would hope I would have a fairly similar kind of a vein of
That's the thing, though, we
style.
don't know
Yeah, it's a
them.
tough one. I think it's funny because I definitely know that I wouldn't be as quiet. I think it's more, I think I tend to try and what's worked for me in the past has, and works for me now still, I think even, is like that. I like that bit of humor in there. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work.
Yeah, I know. Like, uh-oh, that bomb.
But a good bit of the time, I think, I suppose, as you get like that, like you said there, exactly with that. If you have a person with it under your tutelage or under your coaching for a particular time frame, you can definitely, you can, if you're, I think if you are a good coach, you can definitely tweak it and organize your, like, there's certain people that I coach day in, day out, and I coach them completely different than other people. And
Oh, yeah.
I have to kind of side up to them and just kind of be gentle enough. We've got a couple of really quiet people, and I'm like, no, this is fine, which actually really is really enjoyable for me, because I get to be quite technical, and I also get to be very calm when I'm doing it.
And that's exactly what we actually mentioned at the start of this whole thing, the art of coaching.
Yeah.
Was growing yourself as a coach and being humble enough to go, hey, I need to address myself
exactly
based upon the athlete that stands before me. Yeah. I'm not going to be Billy Big Balls and be a boot camp kind of style. Let's go. Yeah. Like, that doesn't work in the long term. Long term growth. You know? Yeah. And yeah, like, I mean, at the end of the day, you might do that with a young guy who needs a little bit of a drive.
Possibly, yeah.
But you wouldn't do it with, I wouldn't do it with my mom. I wouldn't do it with my dad. But like, they still need to learn how to move.
Yeah, like, I was dealing with a more mature lady earlier on, and my demeanor had to change quite a bit. But at the same stage, I think it was like, there was a nice bit of an enjoyment of when the person is moving relatively well, and it's a nice surprise to see them moving so well when you have maybe anticipated that they might not be as strong in it. And then you can start pushing a little further. But it never overstepped into a different type of a framework.
No.
And it was, I think for me, that's very enjoyable to explore that kind of stuff. And that's why I think one of the reasons why I'm enjoying, I like this kind of idea for a podcast, because it will give us, it will definitely kind of remind us to try and rework around certain things, or to maybe look into a little bit more of this, or look into a little bit more of this, to try and improve our own ability on it.
And it's something that it takes time, and you can't learn it from a book. You can't. You need to fuck up. You need to be in front of a group of alpha males that you know are far and above your level, and still have the coaching etiquette and confidence and knowledge to coach them in their way, but then come back down to a brand new class of complete beginners and pass on the correct information for the level that they need. And that just takes time, and that's it goes back to that. It's people first, cues second, or people first, you know, whatever way you want to put it in. But it's always find the language for the person and then become the coach that they need. And I think that's the difference, you know.
In terms of
cues and stuff, I don't, there probably is, if I record myself. Yeah. I know I talked a lot about breathing. Mm-hmm. The one cue that annoys the shit out of me is people shouting elbows.
Yeah.
Because, and we probably lead on to this, is in terms of where would I be going, but what I find a lot of the time is that elbows does not really necessarily, it's not really understood by a lot of people.
No.
Yes, initially people are like, okay, yeah, that means to get my elbows up and it's bringing them more in an upright position, and then get the correct angle to bring the spine into the right angle for the hip to come into it, and la 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 la, and come out in the squat. But what I find is that doesn't necessarily mean that they activate the correct muscle groups to allow that to happen. No. They drive their elbows up, but the cores are they're still curved. They're still in the bad position, part of the front spot, let's say. So that's something that gets me. Something that I use quite a lot to change that would be I'd ask the athlete to drive their armpits or lift their armpits, or, you know, that's the kind of style that I would go with, as opposed to, or sorry, the style of cue that I would go for that same issue based off pure anatomical muscle sequencing. A lot of the time you're dropping because your psoriasis is kicking on and your core's not strong enough. When you lift up the shoulder girdle, a lot of that comes back in.
Yeah.
And people can feel the barbell on the shoulder. They know, right, lift my armpits or lift my shoulders, get them up, as opposed to the elbows.
I'd be in full agreement on that. I think that's a
pet peeve of mine.
Yeah, that is one of mine as well. I think it's one I spotted. I got a bit of that a while back, and there was a particular person I was dealing with, this is maybe a couple of years back, and I would be the same. I would use that similar kind of a shrug of the shoulders, or at least raising of the upper torso, and just getting into that strong armpit position. And there was a person I spent, I swear to God, I spent a good 5 minutes. I was like, I can't, I don't understand what the, why, what? I couldn't find the other. I was like, no, I'm gonna need to do this queue. And it worked, and I was like, okay, I'm keeping that one. That's definite.
Yeah,
And just
it's gas,
put it
isn't
in
it?
the
And how
bag.
different cues work for different people. It's finding the language that works for the person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, it's actually something that I don't know if it would have been early on when I was kind of learning even just how to approach a queuing somebody. And they were like, hey, if you ever find someone that's struggling with trying, you can't just find the language. If you can understand even what the profession is, or what, you know, get a bit of view of their mindset or their experience and try apply the issue. So for instance, if it was somebody that wasn't bracing strong enough, try apply that to what they already know and go, hey, you know the way you do this when you do this? And they're like, oh yeah. It's like, yeah, that's what we're going to do with the barbell.
Yeah.
And it's immediately like, ah, there we go.
Yeah. That's definitely one of the better ones, because I would coach by analogy a lot. And sometimes they're kind of dodgy enough analogies. Mostly they're fairly straightforward ones, but there's a couple of interesting ones a while back. I think they're for another podcast. I'll keep that for the minute.
It happens, but you have to learn. That's it.
Yeah.
If you don't say it, that may be the cue that would have worked for that person. And it's
right,
building
right,
your toolbox. It's having as many cues in your pocket as you possibly can for any given movement at any given time for any given person.
Yeah.
That's coaching 101. That's basics, you know. Outside of that, I'd be quite big on people understanding breathing and why they're potentially injured because of lack of understanding of breathing correctly, even in a daily day to basis.
Yeah.
But certainly when there's a barbell or a kettlebell or if they're running. Running's one that I love teaching breathing mechanics on. It just changes the game completely. And it changed, and the only reason I found out was spent a little bit of time with Chris Hinshaw about a year and a half ago. And up until that time, I didn't, I ran, but you know the way you never really got running. You're like, yeah, I'll run, fine,
yeah.
I'll do it.
But exactly. You see everybody else, you're like, why do you love running so much?
Yeah, you know, I just could never get that. I was like, I understand the benefits, and yes, I'm able to run, but I don't necessarily like it.
No.
And it was when I was training for the blindfolded thing that I did last year.
Yes.
I got some time.
Super stuff.
So, Jesus, man, he just changed the game in terms of his understanding of breathing in terms of that skill set of movement. But yeah, breathing is one thing I think it's spoken a lot about, but
yeah.
I don't know necessarily if it's coached enough for
I
people
think
to really become ingrained.
It's an interesting one looking at the likes of, I think it, like anything it goes, you could have the likes of Max would talk about it a good bit, these guys would talk about it a good bit, and then you have that maybe, and then rotating towards more the mainstream of like Wim Hof maybe getting a big kind of following these days. And it's
he's
other extreme kind of element of it. Whereas most people maybe don't need his kind of stuff. We've got a few characters that might need his kind of stuff, but not everybody.
Yeah.
And like that, it could be just there's, but a lot of the time I think it could be the fact that the mobility alone and ability to even achieve or to be able to find a position where you can actually experience that breathing correctly is very hard to obtain. And like that, the mobility, it's a tough one because you want to work both. You have no choice to work both. You have to, they're hand in hand. But I think that's one of the things we will see a lot more is maybe mobility issues that make it challenging enough to push that breathing portion into it. Although it's getting a bit better. I think it's the same. Like you can keep you look at belly breathing or you look at any kind of crocodile breathing and it can definitely help, but I think it's getting more common, and even the likes of that Wim Hof kind of orientation may help keep an eye on that. Like,
the likes of him is kind of bringing it to the social media scene, which essentially is where life is for a lot of people these days.
Mm-hmm.
It's where the quickest point for information, anyway, for a lot of people.
Exactly.
So it is bringing it. It's one thing that. I mean, if I could, I'd do a workshop on breathing. Like, I've done so much reading on it and fucking about with it myself, to be really honest, and understanding it and then not understanding it and seeing what. I'd love if people could really actually value and this sounds extremely mad, but if people valued, in general senses, people valued their breathing capacity in terms of movement while they're moving, while they're lifting, much as they value getting their six-pack abs, a lot of them would be happier, stronger, less injured, healthier, and just generally better.
Their ability in a lot of things. Like, even you look at in a typical class, you look at a typical session, and the amount of difficulty with breathing control,
it's crazy, and it's unfortunately, it's very unexciting to try and tell a beginner who wants to go full on. Like,
it's no crack at all.
You're not just from a Boston. You're going to feel a little bit sick in a couple of minutes. Chill down, slow down. And essentially, for those that are listening, when your coach says we're trying to pace, a lot of the reason behind that way of thinking is they're actually trying to improve your breathing capacity at X amount of percentage of effort. Mm-hmm. Over time, then you would get better.
Yeah.
But yeah, certainly, man, as coach, like, it is. And it's kind of hard to watch, certainly for me. I'd be like, God, I'd love if we could just get a little bit of time away from all of this and press the pause button, let's say, and fix this, because it'll have such a big domino effect for everything, for daily life even, you know.
I think so.
And even back pain and all that kind of stuff, a lot of the issues is coming from shitty breathing patterns, shitty postural positions because of the breathing patterns, shitty muscle sequencing because of that, and then bang, pain. So there's a very, very big area there that, again, you'd probably have people on that being far more knowledgeable than I would be in that area. But it's something that I love. I'm very passionate on trying to get the concept of breathing across.
Yeah, no, I agree totally. I think I will. There's a few characters I have kind of in my head that I'm like, oh, I think this person now might be a good shout to actually talk about more about that. So I suppose, we'll kind of finish up in a sec, but I'm kind of curious of what your net, like you said, you did Max's kind of different individual seminars and stuff like that, or kind of education type stuff. Is there a particular, what are you looking at doing next in your kind of coaching
My next road for me I'm at the stage that, for the business and all that, sort of from the business side of things, and for the demographics of clients that I would see on a daily basis, between OPEX and Max's syllabus, and then the Catalyst Athletics weightlifting, for the weightlifting, all that kind of, let's call it the coaching education side done on that side. But what I know, and I've always been interested in, and I never really, I suppose it's a self-growth in myself as well, I was never really sure enough that would I be able to go down that road as well. Thankfully, I think I'm at a point now where I can, but it's going into the concept of movement correction, neurokinetic therapy. I'm kind of going down the holistic therapy approach, because for me right now, bringing somebody out of pain is a massive passion. In a holistic way. So essentially, I'm on a road of becoming obsessed with the human system in terms of neural sequencing and nervous system and stimulation and all that kind of stuff. I would love to be in a position where not only along with all the let's call it the kind of standard coaching certificates and all the kind of stuff I've done, there's also the element of a practitioner or a therapist education mindset in there as well. So again, looking at the likes of James Josie, who's someone that I have a lot of contact with, and I'm in the process of potentially going under his wing in the very near future for himself and Phil Mansfield in their kind of new setup. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm going, is like, hey, look, there's so many people nowadays that are unfortunately either about to become injured because of bad movement within the area of fitness, let's just call it that, no matter whether it's bodybuilding or CrossFit or Zumba or spin, you know. I think that we could do a hell of a lot better if we appreciate the human body more and allowed itself to kind of heal itself. So, yeah, movement correction and NKT. I'm actually looking at doing my level one NKT next, which will be at the back end of the year. And in the meantime, while I'm here on my kitchen table talking to you, I have the anatomy trains book in front of me.
Love it.
And I'm in the process of trying to devour this, but it's a little bit slower than normal. But anyway, it's a work in progress.
Nice, nice. Good stuff. Well, Darragh, I'm gonna leave you at that, bro. I think that was a relatively solid first episode.
Yeah. Listen, we might have turned people off, man.
Yeah, very true, very true. Hopefully not. Touch wood.
You're still listening. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. cool. Well, Darragh, I appreciate it. I really, really appreciate it. Good luck with the NKT stuff and with the gym. And it's a fantastic place, guys, in fitbox.ie in Dublin.
It's great, you know, when you first contacted me about this, I said, you know, perfect. I think it's exactly what we spoke about. It's the area that's not getting spoken enough about in terms of the art of coaching or the way of coaching, I suppose, you want to put it that way. So, man, I wish you the best of luck with this. No doubt you've got some big hitters lined up, and I'm just extremely humbled, I suppose, that you'd even ask me. So thank you.
No, it's all good. Thanks a million, Darragh. I appreciate it, dude. And we'll see you soon, bro. Thank you.
You do. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye.